Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You're listening to the Red Sea Podcast, part of the Over the Monster Network.
Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champions.
Hosted by Jake Devereaux.
It's gone. It's into the bullpen. This game is tied. This game is tied. David Ortiz.
And featuring Keaton DeRosier.
It's a grand slam. I'm telling you.
Welcome back to the Red Seat Podcast. This is your host, Jake Devereaux, and today joining me for episode 226 of the show is my co-host, Keaton DeRosier. What's up, man?
Oh, ready to dive on into that trade deadline, baby.
Yeah, so we gave you the little primer. If you haven't listened to that little quick hitter, it's about 16 minutes long. Go ahead and give that a quick listen. We gave our initial reactions to the trade deadline and all the things that the Red Sox did and did not do at the trade deadline. So on today's episode, as promised, we are going to get into the minutia of the roster, how it's currently constructed post-trade deadline, what it could look like in a couple weeks when some other pieces are added to it. And then we're going to go ahead and re-rank the teams in the division going forward for how we think they look post-trade deadline, considering all of the additions that were made by the AL East teams. So let's get right into it, Keaton. Let's start off with some roster thoughts at the very top of this episode. Some amazing news coming up here. Chris Sale, after throwing 81 pitches last outing in AAA, is going to be starting on Saturday, it seems like. And if everything goes well with that start, he is due to come back on August 12th versus Tampa Bay at Fenway Park, a game that you have tickets to.
Yeah, super excited about that. More importantly, having him go against Tampa, who just swept you, I think is a great thing for the team and the morale to get him out there to get a win against Tampa. So lots of positives there, particularly just in general, him being back.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing right there, is just this rotation has not been looking very good. So getting a guy like Chris Sale healthy back at the top of this rotation, that could be huge. So, you know, last time we were on the podcast together, Keaton, just a couple days ago, you teased how bad the pitching has been lately. And it's easy to kind of see that on the surface. I mean, if you look at it, the only guy with an ERA under 4 in this rotation right now is Nathan Eovaldi. And we've seen some ERAs really ballooning over the last month or so, especially that of Pivetta and Martin Perez and, you know, Erod with the last bad start that he had. There's a lot of names trending in the wrong direction. So can you give us a little update on to what's going on with the rotation as a whole.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, this definitely happened to me, and I'm sure it happens to others, but pitching was my number one ask at the trade deadline because of this, basically. Like, they started off so well, basically with the exception of Eduardo Rodriguez. And I think that image of all of those pitchers pitching very well were stuck in a lot of Red Sox fans' minds. But those numbers were, in March and April, they were 11th in the American League. These are ERA ranks. So they were 11th, sorry, not in the American League. Major League Baseball, both leagues. March and April, they were 11th with a 3.94 ERA. Real good start. Also kind of weighed down by a couple stinkers from Eduardo Rodriguez. Then in May, they were 20th with a 4.45 ERA. In June, they were 21st with a 5.32 ERA. And in July, they were 20th with a 4.74 ERA. Overall, they are 20th with a 4.62 ERA. That's bad. And something that also kind of got lost, we talked about how great this offense is and how the Red Sox lead Major League Baseball in comeback victories. But the root cause of that would be poor starting pitching, putting them in a hole in the first place, and then having the bats and the bullpen bail them out. So that was why starting pitching was my number one ask at the trade deadline and why I was disappointed that they didn't do anything about it to address it. I mean, we know Chris Sale's coming back, but really it's like it's those back three. Eduardo Rodriguez at least seemed, last start notwithstanding, that he was kind of turning things around, heading in the right direction. Evaldi's been great all year. But Richards, Perez, and Pivetta have been bad for a while now. Chris Sale obviously replaces one of those. I'd like to see Tanner Houck replace the other. And then I was hoping for a move at the deadline to replace the third and feel much better about that rotation going into a playoff series against an offense like Tampa or Houston or Oakland, who added to their offense. I'm worried about it, man. I'm worried about it. It doesn't look great.
Yeah, I'm worried about it too. You know, looking at the numbers on the surface here, there are just so many candidates to be replaced. I mean, over the last 30 days, Nathan Eovaldi's ERA is 4.94. Nick Pivetta's is 5.0. Erod's is 6.6. Garrett Richards is 5.95. And Martin Perez is 6.26. Now, obviously, you're not going to replace Nathan Eovaldi. He's a lock for the rotation. You can't replace Eduardo Rodriguez unless he's injured because of the ceiling and the stuff, and we know that he's inconsistent, but he also comes through. I don't think you can replace Nick Pivetta because his numbers, actually, if you look at his FIP and things like that, have been a little bit better. He's deserved a little better than he's got over the last couple days. His FIP is actually, or 30 days, I should say, his FIP is actually 4.19 over that time period, and his xFIP is 4.18, so it's like right in line with that. Erod's FIP over the last 30 days, 3.36. So, you know, that last blow up notwithstanding, he's still pitched well. But if you look at Garrett Richards and Martin Perez, their FIP is 6.21 for Richards and 6.20 for Martin Perez. Perez, though, has a better xFIP, 4.11. So if you're deep diving into that, into those numbers a little bit more, Perez is has been slightly better, but I think you could make the case that both Richards and Perez need to be replaced. But my question for you, Keaton, is, you know, looking at how things line up and Chris Sale coming back, is it anybody else other than Garrett Richards, or is he clearly the guy that needs to go?
Yeah, I mean, he's a completely different person without sticky stuff, and that's not what the Red Sox were paying him for, basically. It's not what they thought they were going to get out of him. They have given him a chance to figure it out on the fly. And when you're fighting for a division with a team like Tampa, you can't drag that out. So, I mean, we know what Martin Perez is. I agree with you. I think both need to be replaced, but first things first, Chris Sale coming back. Yeah. You're just not getting what you wanted out of Richard. So I wouldn't try and just drag that out. I would just get him move to the pen, maybe. I don't know how it really fits in the pen, though. That's the thing that I'm struggling with, because he's been good in short spurts, like an inning plus, but it's not the first inning. So
yeah.
Like in the first two innings is when he tends to get wrecked, and then he figures it out after that for the next two innings and gets through four innings in a start. I wouldn't feel great about him coming in to pitch one inning to try and figure it out on the fly. If he only needs to get three outs, I don't think he can figure it out in three outs. So I don't really know what, I mean, his last, I think it was his last start. He kind of figured it out and got through the first and second fine, and then started to get hit in the third, gave a bunch of runs in the fourth. But that was the first time that we had seen him do that since the Sickie stuff. Every other start that he's had, he's been hammered in the first and second inning. So I don't, like, that doesn't really fit in the bullpen. So I don't know if that's how they would want to use him. I think at that point it would just be cut loose completely.
Yep, that's kind of what I'm thinking, man. Because when I'm looking at this bullpen here, it would have to be one of Austin Davis, who you just acquired, Yaxel Rios, who's been pretty good, and then Phillips Valdez, Captain Phillips, who's been awesome in his long relief role lately. Those would be the candidates to be replaced by Garrett Richards. And I don't want him replacing any of those guys. I don't even know how he would feel about being moved to the bullpen, whether he would pout about that. His personality, from what we've seen, kind of tells me that he probably would. I think the Red Sox just need to simply cut bait with him. And you know what? It sucks that you paid the guy $10 million to, you know, have the type of year that he's having, but you're the Red Sox. You can afford to eat that whatever money that's left of him and cut him loose and just move on. I think that that's going to be the cleanest solution here.
Yeah, I think so too. Because I don't think there would, like, a situation where, you know, like, he passes through waivers and they can send him to, like, AAA or something like that on a minor league deal or whatever. I don't think he'd take that either. So I think he would elect free agency and head out. So I think that's kind of where it's headed.
Yeah, and then, you know, in terms of Martin Perez, Tanner Houck is not eligible to come back to the major leagues until the 7th. So you have some more time to look at him and explore whether or not you want to make a move, putting him, Martin Perez, in the bullpen and adding Tanner Houck to the starting rotation. It is pretty well documented that Tanner Houck is really, really good through the first three innings or so, the first time through the lineup, and second and third time through the lineup, his stuff starts to diminish in effectiveness. So there is a pretty solid argument, I think, that could be made that Tanner Houck should be used out of the bullpen and Martin Perez should be allowed to start. And maybe what you do there is you kind of piggyback those two guys, or, you know, use Tanner Houck in just high leverage fireman situations, similarly to how you're using Garrett Richards. I could see a lot of merit to that, especially down the stretch, considering the usage rates for some of those high end bullpen arms like Matt Barnes and Adam Ottavino and Garrett Whitlock, just to kind of keep those guys fresh. Maybe you rely on Tanner Houck out of that role to eat some of those innings.
Maybe I'd rather just start with Houck and then hand it over to Whitlock and piggyback those two than still have Perez in the mix.
Yeah, the problem with that, though, is, like, you still have almost two full months of baseball left to play. You know, you can't, I don't think you can start piggybacking Houck and Whitlock right now, because I think, you know, that essentially takes away Whitlock as an option for you in other games where he would otherwise be used.
Yeah, I'm willing to sacrifice that because I feel strongly about the rest of the bullpen around him, like Josh Taylor and Sawamura.
Okay.
And the addition of Robles, I think, would give them that freedom because Robles could be that high leverage replacement.
So why not just piggyback Houck and Perez?
Because I don't think Perez is good.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I've got a little bit more faith in Perez than you do. So, I mean, that's pretty well documented. Perez is my guy.
Yeah.
But that being said, I don't think Perez is the type of dude that if you had to move him to the bullpen in a long relief role, that he would complain about it. He seems like a pretty good team guy.
Yeah, I would agree.
All right, let's move down to the hitting side of things. So Kyle Schwarber reportedly could be ready right around the time that Chris Sale is scheduled to come back on the 12th. So they said 2 weeks, about 2 or 3 days ago. So that would line up right around that same time. He's also said in a couple of quotes, and I'm paraphrasing here because I don't have the exact quotes in front of me, that he's a good athlete. And he's excited about learning first base and doesn't seem to be too concerned about that. My question to you, Keaton, is when Schwarber comes back to this lineup, who gets replaced? Is it Bobby Dalbec? Is it Franchy Cordero? If Duran continues to struggle, does Jarren Duran get sent down? Who is it out of that grouping for you who gets replaced by Schwarber?
Well, I mean, you mentioned Franchy's been a little bit better since he came back.
Mm-hmm.
Because we still have got 2 weeks to figure it out, then maybe he would then, if he's figured it out, then maybe Dalbec. But I think those are definitely the two guys.
Dalbec and Franchy, you wouldn't consider sending down Duran?
No, I don't think I would.
Okay.
Because even if they go with, like we talked about briefly on the primer, if they go with, if Duran continues to struggle and they go with Schwarber in the outfield with Renfro and Verdugo, I think Duran still adds value on the bench as a fourth outfielder, being that speed guy off the bench and defensive replacement at times. And then use, you know, that experience as a way to acclimate to the major leagues. I think that still benefits him more than going back down to AAA, yeah, and benefits the Red Sox more. So I still think it's Franchy and Dalbec. I don't think Franchy's going to figure it out. So it's probably him, but he is more versatile than Dalbec. He can play a few other positions in the outfield and could be kind of like a speed guy as well. So I think they probably want a platoon first. Yeah, it's probably Franchy.
Yeah, that's my feeling too. I think it's Franchy, just because Bobby Dalbec is effective at hitting lefties. So if you're thinking about, you know, easing Schwarber into a platoon and giving him some time at DH and some time in left field, I think Dalbec is the cleaner fit for the roster. I agree with you fully about Duran. I don't know how much, you know, another month at AAA or whatever would really help him, where, you know, if you are going to have that outfield alignment sometimes of Schwarber, Verdugo, and Renfro, it would be kind of nice late in games to be able to sub in Duran for Schwarber and move some guys around and have that speed on the base paths. So even if he's not playing every day, I agree with you. I think that's more beneficial to him and the team. I think it's Franchy. I have to give credit, though. Franchy has looked much better. I think his swings look better. So I'm not totally closing the book on Franchy as a player, but I think that really that's probably something that we're going to have to look towards next year for, to see whether or not, you know, he ends up being a real piece for this team. I don't know if it's this year. What are your thoughts on that? Are you looking down the road with him?
Yeah, I think you have to. I mean, unless he does something rather amazing over the next couple weeks, which I'm not anticipating.
Yeah.
But I suppose he could. But, nah. Not feeling it.
Yep, I agree. All right, moving down lower on the roster, Marwin Gonzalez has had two rehab starts so far at Worcester on the 30th and the 31st. It seems like he's getting very close to coming back. Jonathan Arayuz would be the guy who is replaced on the roster. Santana and Arroyo, not back anytime soon. I have to say, Keaton, I've missed Marwin Gonzalez much more than I thought I was going to. Between the amount of time that we had to see Chavis and Arayuz make some mental errors, I'm kind of excited to get the slick glove of Marwin Gonzalez back. I know that he's not like the best hitter, but Man, he's solid with that glove.
Yeah. I think, I don't know if I've missed him as much as you have, but having that versatility on the bench, I think that's more of the piece. Maybe not the like the specific person, but just that versatility.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And also, you know, the fact that he can play first base too in a pinch, that's kind of like it's kind of attractive too, especially if you're going to be mixing Schwarber into the mix at that position. You know, having the ability to put him there. I actually think Marwin's a better first baseman than even Dalvec right now. So it's interesting to have that piece. And also, he's kind of a Yankee killer, so don't hate that at all. Looking down at the bullpen a little bit, we did have another move there. Darwinson Hernandez hit the IL with a mild oblique strain when Robles and Davis were acquired. I assume that this oblique strain had a lot to do with his 6.88 walks per nine that he had. So I guess my question here for you, Keaton, is about the pen for the rest of the season. I mean, does Darwinson work himself back into this unit, or is it just kind of too good and too full for somebody who walks that many people?
Yeah, I think that he can. And, you know, we were kind of just tossing this around before we started recording, and I had the exact same thought that Austin Davis right now, to me, is just kind of like an experiment and seeing if you have anything. And I think in the time that he's recovering, if Davis turns out to be bad, like his previous years have suggested, then I think Darwinson slots in there instead of Davis. Like, Davis is kind of at like that bottom rung of the bullpen right now. Mm-hmm. But if Davis is, you know, continues this, I mean, he's only pitched like four innings in the majors this year, but they've been stronger. All of, like, you outlined the reports on the primer about how he's looked a lot stronger and is striking more guys out this year. If that continues at the major league level, then he would basically just be taking Darwinson's spot as Darwinson worked to figure out the walk issues before coming back. But if he's not good, regresses a bit, then I would just slot Darwinson right back in there.
I think that's fair. And both are lefties, so that makes kind of a lot of sense in that regard. Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how Austin Davis looks. We've only seen him one time and he looked fine, but, you know, I'm going to be looking for that. I mean, the Red Sox have been very fair to Darwinson Hernandez this year. They've given him a tremendous amount of run, and, you know, he still showed that he has some limitations in terms of his ability to throw strikes. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that whole thing works out.
But then he's also gone through stretches where he struck out like 20 batters in a row.
Well, the stuff is filthy.
Yeah.
I mean, the slider fastball combination from him it's ridiculous when he's throwing strikes.
Yeah.
But it's just
gotta get that consistency.
Yeah, and it's something he's struggled with for his entire career, and it's a reason why he was converted to relief. I mean, he started off as a fairly highly touted starter, starting prospect, and then, you know, everybody was like, well, it might be easier for him to throw strikes, you know, pitching from the stretch and, you know, going for shorter periods of time. And it just seems those issues are pretty difficult to change for him.
Yeah, and they've clearly gotten worse. Like, I wrote before the trade deadline a piece about how the Red Sox bullpen walks too many batters and they should try and get a reliever who doesn't do that. And there are two pitchers in the bullpen who have more walks than strikeouts, and it was really only due to Darwinson's filth that he was not the third. Because, like you outlined, it's like far too high.
Yep. It's like bad Matt Barnes, but even worse.
Exactly.
Like, before Matt Barnes figured it out, times two, so... And I would say Matt Barnes has probably a little bit better stuff than Darwinson, even. It's close, but I'd probably give the nod to Barnes.
Yeah.
All right, so to wrap up our thoughts on the 26-man roster. I put together what the healthy Red Sox 26-man roster could look like as the team gets ready and heads into the playoffs, if we're looking that far out. And this, you know, there's still a lot of ground to cover, but the team could look like this in, you know, probably by mid-August. So we could have Christian Vasquez at catcher, Kyle Schwarber at first base, Kike Hernandez at second base, Xander Bogaerts at shortstop, Rafael Devers at third base, Alex Verdugo in left field, Jaron Duran in center field, right field, Hunter Renfro, DH, JD Martinez. And I went with a four-man bench here, Keaton. I went with Kevin Plawecki, Marwin Gonzalez, Christian Arroyo when he's healthy, and Bobby Dalbec. Do you see the team returning to a four-man bench like I do, or do you think that they're going to run with nine relief pitchers throughout the playoffs and I guess even before the playoffs into kind of crunch time as this division comes down to the wire like we think it will?
I think they go with the four-man bench because looking at all of these guys that you put together, like Dalbec would be the casualty there, right, if they went with a three-man bench?
I think so, yeah.
And I don't think, like, I think they want to be able to use him as a platoon sometimes at first base. We outlined, like, even having Schwarber split time at first in the outfield, and you need someone to cover first base, and I think that's who they want. I mean, I guess they could dump Arroyo or Marwin there, but
I feel probably like not that's Arroyo after what happened to him there.
Yeah, true. Yeah, that experiment might be over. Plawecki definitely makes a lot of sense. We got a listener question, jumped the gun here, about maybe having giving Vasquez time at first, mm-hmm. And having Plawecki catch. But then again, that means Plawecki would stay on the roster. So, yeah, I don't see how they don't go with the four-man bench. And then the other piece is, like we just kind of talked about, I mean, you're going to rattle off all the names in the bullpen. Bullpen's pretty good. I don't think they need to just keep an extra arm to keep an extra arm. Like, if you're not going to use it, then who cares? Why have that spot be there? And I don't think they need to force somebody into being in the bullpen just to have a three-man bench. I think it's probably the strongest with the names that you're going to list. So I don't think they need to unnecessarily add someone there. And then to keep giving Dalbec time at first, or just time in general, I don't think sending him down makes sense.
Yeah, I agree with you because, like you said, Keaton, Plawecki and Marwin are locks for the bench. And then what it comes down to is, you know, Bobby Dalbec can back up first base and third base and hit lefties. And Christian Arroyo, he needs to be on this team when he's back and he's healthy because he's been such a dangerous pinch hitter late in games. That's well documented this year. So you need that bench more than you need a ninth bullpen arm. Completely agree with you. And let's get to the pitching side of things. So the rotation could look like Chris Sale, Nathan Eovaldi, Erod, Pivetta, Perez. If you want to sub out Perez for Hauk there, I totally get that argument. And I think there's a lot of merit to that. Potentially they do it. In the bullpen, though, this is perhaps the strength of the team. Closer Matt Barnes, Adam Ottavino, Garrett Whitlock, Josh Taylor, Hirokazu Sawamura, Hansel Robles, Austin Davis, and either Tanner Hauk or Martin Perez. I had Hauk there just because I think he's a little bit more dangerous in that multi-inning bullpen role. I'm pretty excited about that potential 26-man roster. There is not a lot of fat to be trimmed from that. If you want to make the argument that, you know, maybe you get rid of Austin Davis and put in Darwinson, or just run with one lefty and put in, Phillips Valdez as another option there, I'm not going to fight you too much on it. But I think that that's a really, really solid bullpen.
I agree. It's the starting pitching that gives me the most pause and I would like to see them go beef it up somehow. I mean, it's possible that they still can with the non-waiver trade deadline.
And no, that's gone.
Oh, well then, never mind.
It's gone now.
Great.
Yeah. Yeah, the whole the trade deadline is just a one date thing now. So
all right.
Well, this is what they have.
Yeah, and that's annoying. Yeah. But I mean, yeah, I'm certainly optimistic about it. Like, the ceiling of those guys we've seen has been really good, and then you know, that was how they jumped out to playing whatever it was, like 650 ball the first 2 months of the season or whatever it was. So I just need a little bit more of that. Let's get through, you know, hopefully, you know, as we're now in August, we're past the dog days, and now it's the stretch run, and people start to kind of, you know, focus in a lot more, realize that the end's in sight.
Yeah.
Maybe that gives him a bit of a boost. Obviously, I mean, Chris Sale, having him back in the rotation should be a huge boost to everybody.
Yeah, I mean, so that's a...
hoping they ride those waves.
It's not quite a Max Scherzer-like addition, but it's close. It's
yeah.
I would say if we looked at all the names that were moved at the trade deadline, that a healthy Chris Sale would be second to Max Scherzer in terms of guys that you would want to add to your team. So even though it is not a trade deadline addition, you know, coming on the 12th, if it does, and we think it will, that's a huge boost here. And also, as we're going to go through right here with the teams in the division, there's a lot of question marks in the rotation of the other teams in the AL East, including the Rays. So, you know, I feel a little bit better about that group of Sale, Eovaldi, Erod, Pivetta, Perez, knowing the names that are on the other teams in the division as well. So let's get right to that right now.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
What we're going to do is we're going to re-rank the division after the trade deadline. And in order to do that, I'm going to just sum up some of the moves that the other teams in the American League East have made. I'm not going to talk about Baltimore because that's pointless. But we will talk about the Rays, the Yankees, and Toronto. So let's start with the Rays here. The Rays just swept us at the Trop. That was not great. They are now in first place by a game and a half. They added Nelson Cruz. They did that before the trade deadline. Subtracted Diego Castillo and Rich Hill, but they replaced Rich Hill internally with Luis Patino. They added JT Chargua and DJ Johnson to the pen. To me, this really boils down to the fact that, like, they added a big bat in Nelson Cruz. I think Patino is probably an upgrade over Rich Hill, who they traded. I kind of think they are a better team, right? They're a better team than they were before they acquired Nelson Cruz.
Yeah.
I don't think they're tremendously better, because I still think there's a lot of questions. You know, sending out Diego Castillo and replacing him effectively with Chargua and DJ Johnson, I think that's a net downgrade. And then Patino, he's a young guy. He's inconsistent. Not that Rich Hill is the model of consistency at his age either, but I think you could make the argument Patino has a little bit of a higher ceiling than Rich Hill.
Yeah, just a little.
Yeah, and he had a pretty awesome start his last time out too, so he looks good. The Yankees. Yankees did a few things. They did three things, in fact, three main things. They did five things, but three main moves. Added two left-handed bats to a Yankees lineup that has been criticized for not being very left-handed in a park that needs left-handed bats. They added Joey Gallo and Anthony Rizzo, just gobs of power there. And they added left-handed pitcher Andrew Haney, who has an ERA over 5 this year, has not been very good. But at the same time, Domingo Herman went on the IL. They added Jolie Rodriguez, who came over in the Joey Gallo trade, and Clay Holmes to their bullpen. Do we feel like this moved the needle enough for a Yankees team that has scored about 100 fewer runs than the Yankees or than the Red Sox and Rays have?
No, because, well, I mean, they're certainly better with those two guys in the lineup, but the pitching is still like pretty inconsistent. Garrett Cole hasn't been great since the sticky stuff. He's had good starts, but more bad starts than good. Tyon's not having a great year. You mentioned Heaney, also not great. It seems to me like they're putting a lot on getting Severino back and Kluber back, being able to like carry them, but they're so far behind. I don't think it's going to be enough. Like they have to just have a stupid last 60 games here to like really make up the difference. I mean, at least in the division, what are they? Maybe they're only like 3 back in the wild card. I guess I didn't pull that up, but it still is an uphill battle. So I mean, I think the division's kind of out of it, and maybe that's what their play is.
Yeah, they're 2.5 back in the wild card.
Yeah. So that's in play, but I don't think the division is. And so if they think they can just squeak in and then ride that pitching in the playoffs, I suppose that makes sense. But I was surprised that that was the way that they went, because it's hoping that that all works out seems like a long shot.
Yeah, Haney does nothing for me. And with Domingo Herman hitting the IL, which is kind of bad luck for them, he's one of their better starters. We're one of their most consistent starters. Definitely dominated the Red Sox last time out. You know, that part of things still sucks. As you said, they have scored the second fewest runs in all of the American League. The only team that scored fewer runs than them is the Texas Rangers. They've scored 425 runs at this point in the season. If you look at the elite teams, Toronto Blue Jays 530, Red Sox 530, Tampa Bay Rays 531, Houston Astros 580. They are not anywhere close. Those two bats are good. We know Anthony Rizzo's in his decline phase, but he's still a really good bat. I'd love to have him. Joey Gallo is awesome. But man, I just think it's too little too late at this point for them.
Yeah, same.
Doesn't move the needle.
Yeah.
All right, moving on to the Toronto Blue Jays. This was really interesting. Toronto really beefed up their bullpen. They added Brad Hand, Joaquin Soria, two guys with closing experience. Longman Trevor Richards, Adam Simber, who they acquired at the end of June, but I wanted to include him too because he's been awesome since he's been on their team. But the big one, burying the lead here, they acquired Jose Berrios from the Twins, who is a very good player, but they gave up a lot to get him, like a tremendous amount. They gave up Austin Martin and Simeon Woods Richardson, who are two of their better prospects. Simeon Woods Richards is a pitcher, and Austin Martin, he's an outfielder slash infielder from Vanderbilt, who was a high pick in the draft just a couple of years ago. They definitely paid up to get a guy in Berrios who has been a little bit inconsistent. I mean, I'm just looking at his numbers right here. He's got a 3.31 ERA on this season, but he was one of these guys that if you look at his numbers, he's 27 years old. Over his career, he's definitely had a lot of blowups. You know, if you look at the number, if you look at his game log over the years that he's pitched, this is definitely his best season, but he's had a lot of years where, you know, he gives up a lot of runs. He gives up 5-plus runs kind of often. He's very, very similar to Eduardo Rodriguez, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, he's been more consistent than Erod. I mean, at least he has consistently had ERAs under 4. his ERA in 2020 was exactly four. The rest, the only time he had an ERA over four was his very first major league debut in the 50 innings that he pitched in 2016. I love these moves because obviously Toronto's offense is spectacular. One through nine. Really is. That is a massive, massive lineup. Robbie Ray is having a great year. Hyunjin Ryu is really good. Alex Manoah, nice young arm there. Adding Berrios to those guys, that's a really potent four pitchers. Steven Matz and Ross Stripling are bad. So still an issue there. But then the bullpen, that was their biggest issue, right? They had nobody in the bullpen. They're kind of getting things out of Romano, who was their closer. Then they had Hand, Soria, and who was the other one? Somebody.
Richards? Richards.
Oh, Simber. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. That's huge for them. But again, it's the same thing with the Yankees. Like, I love the Toronto's moves more than the Yankees moves, but it just seems like it's too little too late. However, I have way more faith in the moves that Toronto made to squeak into the playoffs as a wild card and can make a deep run from there. This team I'd be afraid of. But it seems it's still a pretty uphill battle to make that happen, and particularly now because they have to they're a game and a half behind the Yankees, so they have to surpass the Yankees at some point too. So they have their work cut out for them. I love the moves, though. I just think it's just going to come up just short.
Yeah, I love the moves too, and I love the aggressiveness here. If we were starting from just scratch, I think if this season started today, I might rank Toronto number one in the American League East with these moves.
I mean, I know we're about to rank them, but that was what I wanted you to clarify before we started recording was like, are we ranking them like blank slate or also including the fact that Toronto's 8.5 games back? Because that makes a huge difference.
Yeah, no, totally. It makes a huge difference. And, you know, the way that Manoah has pitched since he's come up, arguably the best pitching prospect in baseball at this point, coupled with Berrios, Ray, and Ryu, you can make a pretty solid argument that's the best rotation in the American League East, and I'm not sure it's that close.
I don't think it is either. It absolutely is.
This team doesn't have a lot of weaknesses. They scare the hell out of me. They are going to be a very tough team going forward, but that being said, 8.5 games back, that's a lot of ground to cover. Especially because the Rays and Red Sox are very good.
And it's not only just the pure games back, too. It's the teams in front of them that have to jump.
Right.
And the more teams that are in front of you, the more breaks you need to go your way. So it just seems like it is really a difficult task ahead of them. But looking at like the wild card race, well, and I'll include the division in that as well. Toronto would be the team that I would pick to rattle off like 15 in a row and really shake things up because I really like the moves that they made.
Yeah, and they're going to be moving back to their home park for the first time in, 2 years? So I imagine that's going to be some type of emotional boost too for the team that's been, you know, road warriors for, you know, since COVID started. So that's going to be kind of cool for them. The way the percentages look right now, according to Fangraphs, the Rays are 83.5% to make the playoffs with a 40.3% chance to win the division. Red Sox have a 42.5% chance to win the division and an 84.8% chance to make the playoffs. So those are both the highest in the division. Yankees at 12.4% to win the division. Blue Jays at 4.8% to win the division. Yankees at 54.9% to make the playoffs, and Blue Jays at 29.9% chance to make the playoffs. So let's predict some things out, Keaton. How do you think the division is ultimately going to finish up, and kind of what is your power ranking of these teams moving forward, taking into account the deadline moves and what the rosters look like, and then also kind of where the teams are in the standings?
I think the Red Sox getting Chris Sale back is just huge. I know it's putting a lot of pressure on a guy coming back from Tommy John, but if I were to load up a bunch of pressure on a pitcher and feel pretty confident it was going to work out, Chris Sale would be the dude.
Yep.
So I know we should temper our expectations, and there's more data to suggest that like pitchers get more back to themselves at like 18 months removed rather than 12 months removed. So there's still probably going to be some transition time. But I feel like Chris Sale wouldn't allow that. So I just feel better about it. And that, to me, I think is what is going to give them the boost, because, I mean, you outlined all of the inconsistencies that Tampa Bay has. Their bullpen is good. Their lineup is surprisingly good. But the starting pitching is uncharacteristically bad. And I think getting Chris Sale back and hopefully Tanner Houck in some form, getting meaningful innings, whether it's long relief or as a starter, is enough to put the Red Sox pitching, I think, far enough ahead of Tampa. That I think the Red Sox are going to win the division. Tampa 2, Toronto 3, Yankees 4.
I agree with that ranking. I guess I have one more question for you moving forward here. So looking at the standings, I agree with those ranks. I also think that the White Sox are going to win the Central. I think that's the only team that's going to get into the playoffs. I think the Astros win the West. But out of the Oakland A's and the Toronto Blue Jays, because Oakland made a bunch of moves too, which of those makes the playoffs for you?
I think it's Oakland.
Yeah.
I like the moves that they made, and I thought they were already good. That's just kind of like another thing of like the Toronto. Again, it just seems like it's just a little bit too little too late. But, I mean, if they keep these guys together, like keep that bullpen and those starters together for a full year, game changer next year. AL East next year is going to be a bonanza.
Yeah, man, I don't know who to pick out of those two teams. I'm gonna go with the Blue Jays. I think they're great. Both of these teams are great, but I'd just rather have the Blue Jays rotation than Oakland's rotation. I'd rather have the Blue Jays bullpen than Oakland's bullpen, and I'd rather have the Blue Jays lineup. So. Yeah, can't pick against the Blue Jays. I think we're going to get three playoff teams from the American League East.
I love that, and in particular, the fact that the Yankees would be the ones left out.
Yeah, that is sweet. That is really sweet. All right, cool. We're going to just give you a little bit of news, and then we're going to get to your listener questions today. Red Sox did not sign second-round draft pick 40th overall pick Judd Fabian. He has decided to go back to Florida. That is unfortunate. He wanted $3 million. They were offering around two. Slot for his pick was 1.85. So he's going back to school. The Red Sox also did not sign Zach Erhard. Peyton Green, who no one expected them to sign, 15th round pick, highly touted high school shortstop. And then Josh Hood. So they ended up signing 16 out of the 20 draft picks. I'd say that is a tremendous success.
Yeah.
And they don't lose the pick. For those of you out there who are concerned that, you know, the Judd Fabian pick, you know, because they don't ever really pick that high in the second round, that's going to go away. No, they get the 41st pick in next year's draft. So they will get a chance to sign somebody else. It's debatable whether or not that was a mistake to try and pick him there instead of going with somebody who was maybe a little bit more signable. But, you know, they gambled and it didn't work out. So do you have any thoughts on that situation?
No, just, you know, I was hoping they would get him signed, but I get it.
Yeah. And everybody gets an extra year of eligibility. Because of COVID, so you know it gives these guys a little bit more flexibility, a little bit more leverage going back to school. And then Marcus Wilson was claimed off of waivers by Seattle, so he is gone from the organization. The outfield depth gets a little more shallow. Does this mean anything to you?
I don't know if it means anything, but I mean, he was having a really nice year. So it's just kind of a bummer that it didn't work out, but I get why it didn't work out. He was just too far gone. I think I'm surprised that nobody else wanted to take a chance. They couldn't work out like a long shot reliever or something for him in an actual trade, and surprised that it was just a clean cut and claim.
Yeah. And I'm a little, well, I'm not surprised that he got claimed. I thought he was going to get claimed. I think it just highlights a weakness in the upper minors for the Red Sox in, you know, the outfield. They just really don't have very many guys who are close to being ready. Michael Geddes, Johan Mieses, Tate Metheny, those are kind of your guys who are outfield depth at this point. And, you know, it's not a great place to be in that area. Devlin Granberg, if you want to go down to Double A Portland. But yeah, just not a ton of depth there. So okay, let's get to your listener questions. First listener question comes from Seth. He says, should they consider calling up Yairo Munoz depending on the severity of his injury? Yairo Munoz was just injured in a AAA game. I don't think they will or need to consider calling up Yairo Munoz at any point. Like, several things would have to go very wrong for that to happen.
Yes. Yep. Full agreement.
Yeah. And even though Munoz can play the outfield, I mean, they have a lot of guys on this roster or coming back to this roster. You know, JD Martinez can play the outfield. Marvin Gonzalez can play the outfield. Kyle Schwarber, who's set to join the team, can play the outfield. There's just so many guys who can do it before him that, yeah, I don't see that happening. Sam Biggs has our next question. This is the one that we sort of answered already. He says, am I crazy for thinking that Vasquez could start to see some time at first base? He has better splits against righties and would continue to give Dahlbeck the chance to sit. I don't think so. And he says he was worried that this is a simple one-word answer. What do you think about this, Keaton? Do you think they would ever consider putting Vasquez there for any meaningful amount of time?
Sure. I mean, they put Vasquez at second.
Yeah, but if Vasquez is playing against righties at first base, what is he not doing?
Catching?
Yeah.
Pilecki, though.
Yeah, that's a lot of pressure to put on Pilecki, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Is it?
I don't know. I
think it's an interesting concept. I definitely don't think it's a one-word answer. I think the issue is that they don't want Dahlbeck to sit. And so that's the hang-up.
See, I don't think they care about Dahlbeck sitting. I think that they don't want...
Well, if you're going to put Vasquez at first,
yep,
and have him be that platoon, right? I assume that would be platooning with Schwarber.
Right.
Then what would be the point of Dahlbeck? Where would he fit?
Well, he would only play against lefties, really. That'd be it. Right?
But wouldn't that be... Oh, I see what you're saying.
He'd just be the short side of a first base platoon at that point.
Yeah, yeah. I was thinking the other way. You'd go with Vasquez and Schwarber. And not Vasquez and Dahlbeck. I get that now. I mean, I think it's interesting. It wouldn't shock me if it happens. I think you're a qualifier there of like significant time. That's probably not the case. A couple games. I wouldn't be surprised if Cora utilized Vasquez that way. I think it's a fun concept.
I think you would have to call Connor Wong up to the roster to make it work with Vasquez playing the strong side of a platoon at first base, because I don't think Pulwecki could go from catching as much as he has been to catching that much. I think it would actually be more likely to play Pulwecki more at first base and continue to allow Vasquez to catch. But in any eventuality, I think you'd need Wong on the roster to really make that a viable strategy. And I also just think that they value Christian Vasquez's game calling and defense too much to do this. That's why they went out and got Schwarber, man.
Yeah.
Occam's razor. Sometimes the simplest is the right answer, right?
That's true.
Okay. Angel Rondon has our next question. He says, why are people so fast to turn on a team? Every team goes through rough times. It's about how they respond to them that's important. Full stop, agree.
Well, yes, but here's okay. My qualifier.
All right, go ahead.
The tough stretch for the Red Sox highlighted some inefficiencies in this team, and the reaction would have been to respond to them, and they didn't. So that's why I'm annoyed. Like, seeing how bad the starting pitching has been, the response should have been, do something about it. Right. And they did not. So that doesn't fill me with a ton of hope.
Yeah, and the fact that, you know, dating back to the Blue Jays series, which started on the 26th, they split with the Blue Jays, but then they lost 5 straight games on the 29th, 30th, 31st, and 1st. So no, 4 straight games, I'm sorry. Yeah, it's their longest losing streak of the season. So I don't think that's a huge deal. I think it's a huge deal that we keep seeing the same mistakes or same things happen over and over again. Yeah. I can't see Bobby Dalbec get up with the bases loaded and one out and strike out and do like literally nothing any more than we have. But I mean, clearly we are not doom and gloom about these Red Sox. We both think they're going to hang on, win the division. So,
yeah.
You know, I think it's easy to overreact, especially when you're dropping first place to the Rays.
That's the thing is, like, drop. So at the top, I outlined how bad the starting pitching has been since May.
Right.
For the past 3 months. And they're still in first that entire time. So it's whatever they're doing is working. It's just, you know, frustrating to see. But that's the thing is, like, so doing the pre-cap podcast and reviewing every single series, you pick up on those things, and you made a good point. Like, the game yesterday was a one-run loss, and they stranded 21 men on base.
Ugh, I know.
And had the bases loaded in back-to-back innings and got no runs.
Yeah.
And that's been a common theme, is when they have been struggling, it's because the offense hasn't been able to string hits together to score runs. But the offense isn't the issue. It's that starting pitching tends to bury them. And then more often than not, the offense is able to dig out of it. But the Red Sox struggle when the starting pitching struggles and the offense can't dig them out of it. And they've had a few games where they've lost by 1 or 2 runs and stranded over 20. And that's just real tough to swallow. Although yeah. The response, Schwarber, should help that.
I agree. Exactly right. Our next question comes from Wind is Cheaper Than Coal. And he says, or she says, I don't know your gender, who finishes rehab and plays the game first, Sale or Schwarber? What do you think?
I'm going to go Sale. Because technically Schwarber doesn't have a timeline to return yet, like an actual timeline to return, and hasn't started a rehab stint yet, where Sale, you know, we're very clearly at the end for him. So I think Sale, but Schwarber not far behind.
I will just take, I think they're going to return on like the same day, honestly.
I would love it.
So I don't know, but for argument's sake, I will say that, Schwarber returns for the start of the Rays series. So beats Sale by a day. Let's just say that.
As long as they're both there when I'm there, great. And now yeah. The last thing to pray for is good weather.
Yeah, that's very ideal. Angel Rondon has a second question here. It says, what's your ideal 5-man rotation when Sale or and Houck are up? For me, it's still Martin Perez. For you, it's Houck with Perez out and Richards out, but we both have Richards out. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Yep. Okay. Next one, the surfing guy says, why do you think the Red Sox never tried JD at first base? That's kind of interesting. Why do you think so?
I think because of his back issues, the stretches and movements at first are much more strenuous on your back than DH and the outfield. And because he's had several years in a row with back issues, I think they wanted to avoid that.
Well, that is a good thought. Yeah, and I hadn't really considered that as a reason why, but that makes a whole ton of sense. The next question comes from E. He says, why am I still watching Dahlbeck strike out in huge spots? Ugh, I know. This is like the worst thing. This is one of the things that pisses me off so much, is Dahlbeck just getting up there and catching air instead of making even a little bit of contact. For lack of a better option. Again, like, the whole this is why they went out and got Schwarber thing, man.
Yeah, hopefully you won't have to watch it for much longer.
Yeah, hopefully not. And finally, Sox Junkie says, can we get a segment where the OTM stands on extending E-Rod? I can safely say I wrote an article at the beginning of this season about all the reasons why the Red Sox should not extend E-Rod, and all he's done is prove me correct. So I am very strongly in team, do not extend E-Rod. Where do you stand on this, Keaton?
I would be okay with it if it was very inexpensive, but I don't think he's going to want to go that route, nor should he. So, yeah, I don't think that's going to happen.
He's just way too inconsistent for me. Yeah. Way too injury prone. So,
and they'll have the funds to go add better pieces.
And there are so many pieces out there.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all coming up Red Sox.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you all for listening to this episode. We hope this fulfilled scratched your itch for all things trade deadline and getting into the minutia of the roster. Again, if you have any questions for us, we always do a call for questions on our Over the Monster account right before we podcast. Or you can just shout us out individually on our Twitter handles. You can find Keaton at The Spoken Keats. You can find me at DevJake. You can find Over the Monster at Over the Monster. And you can find our other podcasts right here where you're listening to this one. In addition to this podcast, we have the Over the Monster podcast with Matt and Brian. We also have the Red Sox on Deck podcast with Shelley and Bob. And we also have Keaton and Shelley doing the Precap podcast, previewing and recapping all of the Red Sox series. So thank you for joining us today. Keaton, thank you. And we will be with you again next week.